The Local Government Committee of March 2nd will come to order. I'm Representative Mark Olson. Do we have a quorum? I don't think we have a quorum yet. We do have a quorum. On Monday, we held over Representative Lanning's bill, House File 994, and with that motion, we never had a chance to really consider House File 995, and I'm going to keep Representative Lanning's bill held over for the moment. And before we hear testimony on the bills, so that those testifying can address both bills, and the committee will, in fact, then consider Representative Earhart's bill, I'll entertain a motion on Representative Earhart's bill to get it before us, and then we'll take opposing testimony that we had left from the last hearing. Representative Peterson?
I'll move Mr. Earhart's file 995.
And Representative Peterson, was that to go to the... Does that have to go to... I don't have any notes here on that destination. Is that General Register?
Where is Mr. Lanning's going?
Representative Lanning's bill is going to GovOps. Okay. So Representative Peterson moves that House File 995 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Government Operations. With that, we'll pick up... I don't see Representative Earhart here if he wanted to make any comments, but I'll leave that for you, Representative Peterson, if he doesn't show up. And with that, we'll take testimony where we left off on Monday. Mr. Kiselishin, could you come forward first? In this one? And after that, just for expediency's sake, we have Bjorn Skogquist, Bob Zick, and Kevin Berglund, and then Paul Larson. Mr. Kiselishin.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hope I got your name right.
Yes, you did, perfectly. For the record, my name is John Kiselishin. I will try to pick off where I left off with my testimony here last Monday here. There's a quick handout that I passed out to the members here. It's got the nifty license plates on it. I hope people find that find some humor in it and find some seriousness in that also. That the this argument of local control can be taken to some fairly great extremes. On page 2 of that handout is the sheet that you received on Monday. It's the one that's titled HF 994 and HF 995 right at the top. And I've got the list of the facts here of the governor's salary and what the cap numbers mean. And I'd like to get down to the items here that are titled Things to Consider. And I think under number 1, I think it's self-explanatory, and that is, where is the public outcry on this issue? Where are the citizens in the community that are coming forward in your town hall meetings or that you meet when you're door knocking in your districts that are saying that these salary and these benefit packages are unreasonable and unfair to the employees of your political subdivision, city, or whoever is covered under this cap? Item number 2 is we're talking about how is Greater Minnesota going to fare. Essentially, how are the rich cities and the poor cities going to fare on a particular issue like this? Well, we already know there's a disparity that exists between those cities that have more and the cities that have less. What is going to happen when cities like Roseville can suddenly pay $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 more for a position when a smaller city may not be able to keep up with that? I come from a big city that has money, but that doesn't mean that I'm not concerned about the rest of this state. And number 3, why are we including this to cover across the board? I think it's rather, that's self-explanatory also. I think that there are a couple cities in this state, like Minneapolis and St. Paul, who are in a completely different ballpark from cities like Plymouth or Roseville or Maplewood. There are counties like Hennepin County that with, I think, a 1.1 million population and I believe a $1 billion budget, I mean, they are substantially different than the majority of the 87 counties of this state. And maybe there should be some allowances for those, what I would consider political subdivisions that are not the norm in this state. And item number four, I guess the question is well, there again is are people competing locally or nationally for employees? Minneapolis is probably competing with Des Moines, Madison, St. Louis, and any of the big major cities. That competition does not exist in cities like Roseville or any other similar cities of our size. We're not a national player, and neither are the majority of cities or counties in Minnesota. Number five, I discussed this at Monday's meeting. If a governing body gives a pay raise and the next governing body comes in and says we want to restore that and lower it back down, that may not be possible. It depends upon what the contract provisions give. And I gave you the example in Roseville where you can't lower a person's salary unless you lower everybody else's. So this may not be possible. We've heard that number six, that salary raises come increases in severance packages. Many employees have a six-month severance package deal as part of their contract. As the wage goes up, the severance package goes up. Number seven is, I heard here at the committee that the cap was put in place in approximately 1977. I was 5 years old at the time. I would venture to guess that probably most political subdivision employees in the state that are currently working probably started after that cap was put in place. They know it's there. They took the job. They took the position. I don't think there's any surprises or any obligation that exists to lift the cap for those particular reasons. Number eight is what positions are currently vacant and unable to be filled. I haven't heard any testimony here today that indicates that there are positions sitting vacant today that haven't been filled and that can't be filled with the current salary ranges that we have. If there is a list of positions that can't be filled, I think that the committee should see that list and the public should see that list. But to my knowledge, there's no list that exists. All these positions are filled. Number nine is, why are we ignoring these other benefits? That's been a topic of discussion, I believe, by the state auditor. It's been a topic of discussion, I'm sure, by legislators about all these, you know, free professional dues, taxpayer-paid Rotary Club dues, $6,000 per year car allowances. Nothing in this bill does anything to require more public notification of those portions of the salary package. That issue is not addressed here in this bill, but I think it is an issue. And, Mr. Chair, if I could have another minute or two more. There is 1 minute. Okay. I'd like to point the attention to the members to the next page that I have here. It's titled, Some Comments Require a Response. And on page one, I've got items number one through five. And page two is questions six through ten. And page three is 11 through 15. I'd encourage you, if you have an ability, to look through some of these items here. I'd like to highlight number two, which says the salary cap is preventing us from keeping up with other states. What you'll find out, if you turn a couple pages to the back of the packet, I've included from the International City County Management Association their most recent salary survey for municipal officials and for county officials. And what you will notice on both of these pages is that the average salaries in the most recent year they have available do not exceed the current cap. These are the average salaries across the country. They don't exceed the current cap, and I think that's different from some of the testimony you've had. And the last thing I want to highlight is the comments from Peggy Ingerson in the Sunday Pioneer Press. And she was asked, why spend so many years in public service when your skills would probably be better compensated in the private sector? Her response was, my dad was a finance director in a federal agency and served as a role model for me. He taught me the important influence government has on people's lives. And I think that's the kind of people that we want to have in government, people who believe in public service, not people that are here primarily for the paycheck. Thank you very much.
Question for Mr. Kiselishin.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Bjorn Skoglquist, and I'm going to state again, Bjorn Skoglquist and then Bob Zick and Kevin Berglund. If those in line, and then last, Paul Larson, if you'd come up to the table so we can just continue on and not without delay.
Okay.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please. You may proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, members of the Local Government Committee. My name is Bjorn Skoglquist. I am the mayor of Anoka, although I'm not here today on behalf of my city. I'm here to offer some observations that I've had in the past couple of years as the mayor. The several bills and amendments are now before you. And I want to offer some anecdotes about the ability of cities that are not created equal to pay to keep those people and retain them at the local level. Cities like Anoka are certainly good cities, they're strong cities, but they cannot compete financially with other cities, and that's been borne out a couple of times here in Anoka the past couple of years. We've lost three department heads to other cities of 60,000 population or greater that I would classify or determine that they are large growth suburbs. Those suburbs have the ability to pony up more money to pay for those people. They're going to the cities and they're not becoming department heads in themselves. They're becoming second or third tier management in departments in those cities and counties. And what that does is it starts to turn a city like Anoka into a revolving door. Now, there's a trickle. We can handle it. It's not a issue that's causing great concern right now, but it does cause a hiccup. It causes trouble. And I think by completely eliminating the cap, you would see that turn into a flow. I also think a blanket raise would do the same thing. And I ask you, members of this committee, to consider the Anokas of this state for which you've created HACA, LGA, you've created fiscal disparities so that the playing field could be level. And I suggest that if this comes off, we're going to see a lot more people from outstate and even inside the metro move up to a Hennepin County, move up to an Anoka County, and the cities that can't compete or pony up the dollars will be losing folks. One of the top level people that we lost was almost like a hostile takeover. I don't know what you would term it, but a letter went into the Anoka County Union complaining about the terrible street service in this particular neighboring community. And within 4 months, the city had created a program whereby they paid $15,000 more. They gave this person all the toys and funds they needed to create a better department, and that person was gone from the city of Anoka. I just simply would like to point out we're not all created equal, and I'd ask you that when you're considering this to maybe look at a real solution, which would be exempting those cities which need to grow. I'm not here to say that I want to stifle the growth of large communities, large counties. There needs to be some kind of change. But I also think you should look at the exemption process and make that something that is predictable so that the folks that are coming here and testifying understand they can, in fact, apply for an exemption and may have a chance at getting that. I stand for any questions that you may have.
Questions? Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
My question, and I chaired council meetings myself for several years, but I get the impression from your comments that this cap creates a glass ceiling that somehow protects your staff from taking an opportunity someplace else. And I want you to clarify that for me, because if that were encased, if that true really was your objective, I think you probably have issues there that have nothing to do with the salary. It probably has nothing to do with the working conditions. So help me understand your testimony.
Just real quick.
We don't have any problem with working conditions in the city of Anoka. Anoka is consistently, by our department heads and our employees, called a good place to work, a quality place, a place that people honor and respect. The fact of the matter is, no matter how much honor and respect you have for a particular community, if you have a family and you have a job and another city or another community can afford to pay $20,000 more, including larger benefits, why you have some questions to ask. And I don't know that I would classify that an artificial ceiling. What I would say is that there's going to be a problem with this. People will come back and they will ask for levy limits to be let off. They'll ask for more LGA. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, because Anoka is not a complaining city. We will do what it takes to make this work. But I, again, would make the point, not all cities are created equally, and you have to look at that when you're looking at the growth cities and when you're looking at greater Minnesota.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Skolquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bob Zitt. And Kevin Berglund. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
My name is Bob Zick, lifelong citizen of Minnesota and resident of North St. Paul. And I want to thank the chair and the committee for the opportunity to address you. I also am the co-producer and host of Public Access Television, which we've done for about 14 years. We cover local government, school districts, and let the citizens know what's going on. We broadcast into 26 communities. Kevin Berglund over here is one of the co-producers, and our purpose is to follow what our local governments are up to and the impact of decisions that are made at the state legislature. And we will show part of the important comments on our television show tonight. My position on both the House File 994 and 995 is in opposition. And I'll start by saying, unlike the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Counties, who are lobbyists for the bureaucracy, I am an advocate for clean government and the taxpayers. The question I have, whatever happened to public service, and it is always about how much money can be extracted from the taxpayers. You know, when I look at this thing, once again, we're taking care of the top. We're taking care of the people that already have the best when it comes to our local communities. They're the people that have the golden parachutes, the perks, the car allowances, the college tuitions, the free meals, the cell phones, the computers, and the persons that are working for our municipalities on the other end, they get walked over all the time or stepped over. So in opposition to this, I have never seen a shortage of candidates for any of these jobs. There is that waiver out there that if there really is, would that hardship would be, there is a process in place already to solve that problem. I think we're going down the wrong road, that 95% cap of the governor's salary is a reasonable benchmark. I don't, when it comes to the governor, maybe people should say we need to raise the governor's salary. And I don't think that's going to happen. So why do the bureaucrats that are in a lesser position than the governor all of a sudden need to have a better compensation package? And these golden parachutes, the city of Maplewood, the best we could tell, it cost about $300,000 to get rid of our last city attorney or city administrator out there, the city manager. And there were so many things written into that contract that it cost us dearly. And I think if you really want to do anything, is look at these contracts that these city managers and some of the other administrators are given. And I think that's really where you ought to start. And when you look at giving these people a 30% increase in salaries, I think that sends the wrong message. I really do. And whatever happened to free markets? I really look at this committee and say, you know, we have a monopoly that we've created out there, either by this professional loop or in the case of superintendents, by licensing. And so we artificially drive the cost of these things up, and I really think that this kind of legislation isn't the way to go, but we should have some legislation that addresses the cost of having these people in place and protecting the taxpayers and the citizens. I thank you, people.
Any questions for Mr. Zick? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zick, were you here covering the testimony on Monday, and did you tape it at that time as well?
Did not, but I surely followed what was going on. And when I heard some of the comments that came back, I guess I have, in honesty to you, on this issue, I'm getting the feeling that the Democrats on this committee are the fiscal conservatives.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Lanning.
Well, Mr. Zick, since you didn't cover the testimony on Monday and didn't tape it, I hope your viewers are given the benefit of hearing the other side of the story.
Mr. Zick?
We do present both sides of the story. I know there's audio tapes made of this. So besides the information that we've already have, we will listen to the tapes. But I followed this, Mr. Lanning, long enough, and I've seen this process in government, and I think the problem here is that I talked to some of our local elected officials, and nobody was aware that this is underfoot, that there's this effort that's being this, my, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Counties is driving this, and that the elected officials and surely the citizens and the taxpayers have no clue that this is going on. I hope our two major newspapers pick up on this. I think this is totally wrong. And I think this is the kind of things that the voters absolutely need to know about.
Here's one of the major newspaper articles.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Zick.
Thank you.
Mr. Bergwin.
Mr. Chair, I'll
okay. Thank you. I'm apprehensive to say, is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? we had an overload on Monday. I see one hand. Can you limit it? We had a lot of testimony for the bill on Monday, and I really want to be fair. So come to the committee, come to the table, and state your name for the record, and you may proceed. But I appeal to you to consider very brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of this local committee. My name is Tom Q. I'm a former mayor of Austin, Minnesota. I'm now a councilman in the city of Roseville. I am here not to support raising the or eliminating the salary cap on local government employees. I support leaving things just as they are. Top-level city employees are good, have good salaries, have car allowances, get free training classes, paid holidays, work the day shift, and get all government holidays and weekends off. Budget pressures this year caused the city of Roseville to increase taxes 9%, and we laid off 5 people in jobs. If one city starts giving out huge raises, then we are forced to do the same. Working in city government is about public service. We pay good wages, we give good benefits, and Minnesota is a great place to work and live. This should be enough. Let's leave things as they are, and I thank all of you for your time.
Any questions? Thank you, sir. We also have some guests here with us today I'd like to acknowledge and ask that you welcome them from St. Louis Park High School, the ninth grade. Let's give them a welcome. Yes, sir. And then Paul Larson as well. And then we're going to close the testimony. State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Osberg. I'm the city administrator in Hastings. And I had no intention of testifying today, thus I'm here a little bit more casual than I might otherwise have been. I've been the city administrator in Hastings since March 20th of 1989. And if I can ask maybe just anecdotally, if there's a job out there that pays for college tuition, my oldest is a senior at Hastings and I have a fifth grader, I'd love to apply for that job. My only comment I'd like to suggest, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I'm not at the salary cap, and I'm probably a few years away from it, so I'm not speaking to try and support my salary or to seek greater salary. The only point I want to make today, and all the testimony that's been done today, I have no problem with it, but I think it ought to be done at the council chambers at the Hastings City Council. If the Hastings City Council wants to pay me $100,000 or $130,000 or $150,000 or whatever the case might be, Hastings is a well-run city, a lot of active involvement from the community. If that decision needs to be made, my suggestion is to let it be made at the city council chambers, because if they choose to pay me or any of the other department heads anything beyond what they think is reasonable, they're going to hear about it.
Thank you, sir. We've already heard plenty of testimony for the bills.
I'm certainly not here opposed to it. So I just think it ought to be done at the local level. I think, and my apologies if the intent was for those opposed. I certainly didn't mean to upset the format, but I couldn't sit still any longer.
We found that out on Monday too. Thank you. Appreciate you coming forward, Mr. Larson. Is Paul Larson here? Welcome to the committee. And state your name for the record, please. And you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Paul Larson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Employee Relations. In that capacity, I also am the state labor negotiator. I've been a state employee for 32 years. The Department of Employee Relations oversees collective bargaining for over 15 bargaining units that have a payroll and benefit system of almost $5.8 billion. I have a long way to go before I'll ever be concerned about the salary cap in my job. I, too, am a dedicated public servant. I know that this is a very difficult issue for you and for the people that have testified in this hearing with respect to pay and salary and benefits for the work we do. This is a difficult process for me to testify against. I've seen some very, what I consider some very compelling arguments in favor of this, but this is not the time for us to eliminate the salary cap. The current salary for the governor is $120,303. 95% of that salary, which is currently in place on the salary cap, provides for $114,288. This bill, the two bills which you have before you, Senate File 994 and 995, would provide approximately the potential of a 30% pay increase for those public employees, all during this time when we are struggling with the state's budget. The current salary cap provisions, in effect, provide what we believe to be a fair and legitimate process. At Monday's hearing, I heard testimony, and at least there were some questions that I think we can clarify, and that is that someone wanted to know how many public sector jurisdictions we have in Minnesota. We have over 1,500 public sector jurisdictions in Minnesota. This does, however, include hospitals and school districts as well. We have over 220,000 government employees. And again, this includes schools and hospitals. Since the salary cap waiver has been in effect, we have had 56 waiver requests. We have granted 35, and we currently have one pending now. Let me give you a little bit of the process, and Mr. Chair, I'll try to be as brief as I can. The current process provides for the public sector jurisdiction to submit
their request to the Department of Employee Relations. Now, these requests are taken seriously. I heard testimony on Monday with respect to some of the delays that occur, and I'd like to comment on that. There really is no set format in how these requests are submitted, and we do acknowledge that there are a lot of consultants out there that have taken this on and are representing cities and counties in these requests. There's no requirement that that has to be filled out. But I've seen requests that have come in for raising the salary cap for an employee under the 95%, which is merely an envelope full of news clippings and statements that are off the Internet website. And so as a result of that, we typically have to ask questions. We have to send information out to the agencies requesting further information. What the Department of Employee Relations has put together, since we now have been receiving more of these requests, is we've created an 11-point questionnaire, which we request the agencies that are filling out this information to provide us. In addition, if we're granting the request, we have to send this information over to the Department of, the Legislative Commission on Legislative Coordinating Commission, or we call the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. They have meetings. They meet on an ad hoc basis. And so to the extent that there is a time lag in some of this, I believe that there's really no reason to blame this on the Department of Employee Relations. One of the first things we ask for in our information gathering is that does this position demand a specific expertise? And are you experiencing a recruiting or a retention problem? Most of our requests are based on the fact that they want to keep the employee that they have and they want to give them a pay raise. With respect to a few more comments on compression, I've been involved in labor relations for over 25 years. We always have compression issues. And after about maybe 5 or 10 years, we have to address those issues. But it's not uncommon in a compensation system to have people that are close to the top and are there. But the minute you get rid of that and you raise the top, then you have the steps in between or the gaps for the pay in between. But sooner or later, with the salary increases, we have compression. Compression is a phenomenon in the compensation system that, while it's an issue, sometimes it is not necessarily a problem. If there is a recruitment and retention problem, we ask, are we able to fill the vacancy? Now, we may not be able to fill it from a nationwide basis, but we are able to fill the vacancy. We also ask what the number of applications are from the qualified application pool. I think it's fair to say that the public employees that we have in Minnesota are excellent candidates for a lot of the jobs that we talked about here. We may have problems if we're competing with San Francisco and some of the other places, but the public sector employees that we have in our applicant pool here, we believe, provides a quality selection for us. The evidence that we have at the Department of Employee Relations and that we have shared with the Legislative Coordinating Commission has established that in a majority of the instances, we are retaining employees, and where we have had vacancies, we are filling them with qualified employees. I bring to you a perspective from a state labor negotiator that I think is important for you to understand. The state is entering into the bargaining process right now with its state employees, and other public sector jurisdictions are doing so as well. We're still operating under a budget deficit. No one is needing any extra funding, or very precious little if they are. The last round of bargaining with the state, we were able to bargain a wage freeze for our state employees, and some other public sector jurisdictions did so as well. The money that we put on the table, whether it's for a pay increase for our bargaining unit employees, or for the employees that are close or at about where the 95% cap is, comes from the taxpayers. It comes from state taxes, it comes from city taxes, and county taxes. I believe that the legislative history that you heard on Monday regarding the 95% cap, why it was put in place, was that because public sector employee wages are derived from the taxpayers, the legislature needed some accountability on what was being spent in those public jurisdictions for wage increases and salary increases.
You can't have a public sector employer that goes out and negotiates wage increases and then comes to you as legislators and expect you to pay the bill by raising the taxes on the citizens of this state. This legislation would provide for a potential 30% salary increase. If I put 2% money on the bargaining table for our state employees, I'm going to need $220 million new dollars. 2%. The position of our commissioner, Commissioner Ludeman, and this administration is that the current salary cap is a tool to control spending, and we believe that the statutory provisions provide this protection. Now, someday, when we get our spending under control, there may be an appropriate time to discuss eliminating the salary cap. But until we have that under control, we believe that this should remain. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair.
Questions for Mr. Larson? Representative Pimar.
Mr. Chair, yes, I have a question. Well, first, I'd be happy to offer an amendment to either one of the bills to increase the governor's salary, but I don't know if this is the appropriate time to do it. But let me just say this, that I happen to serve on the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and so I have a specific question, two questions for you, Mr. Larson, because the LCC is a bipartisan group made up of Republican and Democratic senators and representatives, and all of the requests for a waiver that we heard this session were all approved, and you or the commissioner rejected, if I remember, all of those requests that we approved. So the question is, as some of the testimony we heard the other day, do you think that cities are simply, and counties are simply giving up and not coming to the LCC because they know it's a waste of time given your position? And as Auditor Anderson said, are now going around the policy and using other methods to increase compensation that keeps them within the cap? That's question number one. And are you speaking for the administration, and does the governor have a position on either one of these bills?
Mr. Larson.
Now, Chair Representative Pamer, yes, I am speaking on behalf of the administration, and the governor does not support this legislation. With response to the first question, I think I've got this, and that is that are certain public jurisdictions not submitting salary cap waivers because their waiver has been rejected? In other words, have they given up? No one to that effect has told me that, but I would presume that there may be some, particularly in light of the fact that nothing has changed. I'm trying to think of another question. The
Representative Pamar.
I'm sorry.
I think whether if you agree that cities and counties then are going around the salary cap and using other forms of compensation to attract or retain them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pamer, we do have some concerns about that. We have talked about it. Anytime you're trying to have some kind of oversight on salaries, there's always going to be this issue. I can tell you that in 1981, state employees were able to sell vacation. Current state employees were able to sell vacation, and when the legislature found out about that, they passed legislation that prohibits us from doing that. And while I'm not sure if giving a employee extra vacation hours with the sole understanding that they don't liquidate them until they leave as an additional bonus it violates the 95% cap, but I do believe that it certainly does not meet the spirit of that.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Yes, sir. Following up on his question, we have a approval request list that was passed out for some period of time. And I noticed the last no waiver was for the new Hennepin County Library Director. And it says that the request was submitted in February of 2004, was declined by you April of 04. You did not consult with the subcommittee since you were not required if the commissioner intended to decline. So I have two parts of the question. So the way it reads, if there's an intention on the part of the commission to decline it, then it doesn't even have to go to subcommittee. And I would say that would probably be the backup to Mr. Kamar's question. And secondly, the last turn down was the Hennepin County Library, and we're in the process now of bonding, making a major contribution to that library in the form of a planetarium. It's a very significant public investment, and yet they can't go into the national market for this very significant library because the commissioner intends to decline the request. And so, you know, I see that as a real anchor to the Hennepin County Library. Can you give me some enlightenment,
Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pearson, I don't have the specifics on the Hennepin County Library request, but again, I would say that, again, the recruitment, the retention applied to that. The other would be that if a request is going to be denied by the Commissioner of Employee Relations, we do not submit that decision to the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. However, we have in the past, my history is that we have through various administrations as well as various forms of that subcommittee, we have approved requests in the Senate to the subcommittee and they have reduced them in the past. So there is a system in place.
Representative Cornish.
A good question, Mr. Chair, and then a follow-up. Mr. Larson and I used to sit across the table from each other negotiating contracts. I was the president of the union, and he's a state negotiator and a skillful one. And but I was wondering, first question is, what is the average wage of a state trooper right now? A state employee is a state trooper in the state of Minnesota, about a mid-range.
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cornish of the state trooper. Well, the average state employee pay right now is about 20, and I'm just rounding it up, about $22 to $23 an hour. That does not include fringe. I would say that the troopers would be significantly higher there. Again, we'd look at we have the minimum and the maximum on the salary range. A lot of the state troopers, I would say, are probably at the third quartile on their pay range. So I think I would be fair to say that the troopers are probably at about $30 an hour.
Would be about, but Mr. Chair, would that be under $40,000 a year then, would it?
No, there's 2,080 hours in a year. $20 an hour is $40,000.
Mr. Chairman, my point is here, I guess, that the people out there, the conservation officers, the state troopers, Fugitive Apprehension Task Force, Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, all armed individuals risking their life every day, get paid about a third of what these people are now. Last year, they got zero and zero on their wages. And this year, I really don't know what they get, what the salary subs were set at or anything. But to go back to the law enforcement community in my area or back to my 18 small cities and none of them make anywhere near this and vote for either one of these bills, I think I would get lynched. I'm not for either one of the bills, and I would like to include school superintendents in with this mix because I think they get paid too much too. I take a little more fiscally conservative side than most. But that was just my question and follow-up. It's just the timing right now. After we've asked these people to sacrifice so much, to stay at zero and zero, and then we go and boost this up now, it's just bad timing.
Representative
Hodge. Mr. Larson, I just have one question when looking at the requests for waivers. Is there a reason why recently, for the first time, that the department hasn't honored the recommendations from the subcommittee?
Mr. Norris.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm not quite sure. Some the testimony that I've had from the, my appearances at the subcommittee is that the subcommittee doesn't want to meddle with the recommendation by the city and county, and I think you've heard that throughout this, where they believe that they should be out of this oversight.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hush.
I have my hesitancies about this bill, and one of my concerns is I think there's some justifications for why we have this issue in front of us, and I'm concerned that some of the policies for the waiver process just aren't working right now. I think some of the recommendations may be justifiable, but with some of the frustrations that they may not be able to get waivers, we're now dealing with a bill that's going to affect every city and every county, no matter how large or how small they are. And I'm concerned with that. I wish we could come to a compromise where, you know, the waiver process works. And I'm not saying it doesn't, but from the testimony that we had the other day, and have a compromise instead of, you know, this all region, all or nothing type proposal.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on the follow-up about the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Employee Relations, and the instances I believe that you're talking about is that the local jurisdiction has submitted the request, let's say for $135,000 or $130,000. The cap is $114,000. We've recommended it to be $124,000. We submitted to the subcommittee, and they've recommended to keep it at the $135,000. That's where we've been at odds with them.
Mr. Larson, I have two questions. One is in regards to new hires. Have you ever seen from your position, in your position, any reports of problems or problems from inexperience or lack of qualifications from previous hires when they've been searching, seeking for a new hire to raise the salary cap?
Mr. Chairman, certain occupations we have, yes. And there are certain occupations that we have recognized that, and in those instances we've granted the salary cap waiver.
So Mr. Larson, that is one criteria you use for raising a salary cap?
If we know that we're going to have a recruitment recruiting problem, I stand corrected.
Okay. My other question, Mr. Larson, is... And I'm not sure if you'd be able to have all this information from your position, so I got to kind of ask this in two parts. Are you able to see with all the applicants or the requests that come to you whether or not we're getting a good supply of people from the national market? And if you're able to see that with the requests that come to you, have you had any indication that we are not able to reach that national market with our requests for new hires?
Mr. Chairman, we do not make the distinction from the national market unless we believe that we're convinced that that is in fact an issue. For example, we granted a waiver for the Minneapolis police chief. That we thought the decision was made in the discussions with our commissioner that would be a nationwide search. In instances for some of the other occupations that we've talked about here, we believe that the applicant pool and the candidates that are currently available to us in Minnesota here is sufficient for us to comply with the provisions of the law.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, I thank you, Mr. Larson, for bringing your years of experience and testimony to the table. Thank you. With that, I'm going to close testimony. And we have, at this point, Representative Peterson will renew his motion for House File 995 that will be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee, and we'll take discussion from members. It's my understanding these amendments are all for Representative Lanning's bill. Trusting that to be correct, unless there are some verbal amendments or anything for this bill. Just open it up for discussion on that motion. Representative Earhart's bill, House File 995. Representative Earhart, would you like to bring us some comments? Welcome again to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You brought us a lot of people to testify, Representative Earhart.
Yeah. Well, I want
you and Representative Lanning.
I wanted to make sure you had something to do this afternoon. I heard so many negative, incorrect things that I don't really know where to start, but maybe I can just brush on a couple of those. The last testifier that was up here, well, let me start with Representative Cornish. You know, the people out there with those weapons are good people doing a good job. But let's take an example of someone in the largest county that runs the largest county in the state, which has a budget of $1.7 billion and 11,000 employees. Now, to compare a police officer or a DNR officer with the kind of job that we're doing here, it's not apples and oranges we're comparing here. We're trying to find people and pay people for their skills. Someone, the fellow from, where is he from or where was he? Okay, now he's talking about, the state government is involved in funding cities, but they ought to have something to say about how they handle their affairs in the city. But there are some cities that don't get any local government aid. The state is not funding them. And therefore, that's the best reason I can think of for allowing the local government to make their choice and pay the right salaries they have to get the right people to run their operations. The other guy over here and I'm sorry to call him Guy because I don't know what his name was, but he said he hadn't never seen anything in the paper about this. Well, I just gave him the article about the morning paper. It said, "The last interior is in order, the cap should go." That was an editorial in the Minneapolis paper this morning. I was not called to ask if I'd like to hand it over, but it seems to play right into what we're talking about today. Ignoring local control and local decision making has been, right down to the mayor, the ex-mayor of Roseville, who found out about what ignoring local wishes meant by losing his job. There ought to be some sense in that when you get next to the people that you're governing, right there staring them in the face, they're going to take care of what you do wrong. Now, we only stand down, once every other year in the House, but they stand down every week or every other week. So, I just can't believe some of the stuff that I'm reading here. Where is the public outcry? The public outcry is to each of you when you go out and door knock, not to bring up salaries of your local government people, but to bring up things that the state should be concerned with on a broad base. And the broad base is supplying their elected officials in the city with the tools they need to do their efficient job. I was asked to go to a cat fight that Edina's having over their transportation plan. And they wanted me to come to the city council. I said, that's your job. You settle a cat fight here, and I'll try and do something with it over at the state. And they take care of their local officials by either booting them out of office or by encouraging them in what they're doing. How will greater Minnesota fare against rich suburban communities? Well, I'll tell you, if rich suburban communities, I'm putting in the same language that the ex-mayor of Roseville did, if they can't compete regionally or nationally, then the greater Minnesota is going to get rated for personnel that maybe are not adequate for the job, but the only people that are available. It may be okay for a small town in Austin, Albert Lea, until they get their feet wet, before they can step up to Plymouth, which is mentioned in that article, incidentally. Plymouth needed a new city manager, and a national search seemed to be in order. But the mayor said, Mayor Judy Johnson, no strong out of tier candidates wanted the job. It didn't appeal much to qualified candidates from other Minnesota cities either. The reason, state law forbids, and so forth. So that's for the top city and county administrators, compensated by the position must fall in line at a lesser amount. So, There is just too much rhetoric going on here. I don't want to even... one other point I think I should make. Why are we ignoring the current facts of having salary benefits like free lunches, early for dues, and car allowances? As a matter of fact, this is based on total compensation for the local county, local government employees, whereas as I mentioned the other day, the governor's is only based on salary. I just think that we have to move. We forget that we're hiding under some kind of big rock here in Minnesota. The only state in the nation that has controls on how much we pay our local officials. That's incredible. I mean, should we have an award for we're the last state in the nation to pass 0.08. We're the last state in the nation to have local controls on salaries of our local officials. I really wonder what this has done. In conclusion, I would just say paying what the market demands for skilled, capable administrators leads to more efficient and effective government services, and that saves money in the long run. Why should the legislature want to thwart the effort of hiring good employees? That was the conclusion of the article that was in the paper this morning. Well, I rest my case. Let's move Minnesota into the century that we're living in and not be still carrying our horses and buggies around with us.
Discussion, questions?
Sure.
Representative Paymer.
I think Representative Earhart has said it well, but I just want to give you an example of what one of the problems is. And, you know, I do understand what Mr. Larson is saying. This isn't the time, but when is the time to do it?
That's right.
There were times when the economy was flush and waivers were overturned, requests for waivers were overturned after the LCC approved them. But just taking my own county, for example, Ramsey County, and, you know, this is no small county. The size of it, the budget, the responsibilities for the city manager, the Ramsey County came in for a waiver. The county manager for the county manager position, making $114,000, which is a lot of money for some of us here, but for a CEO of a county our size, and when you look then in the year 2000, the executive the county administrator for Hennepin County was granted a request to. An annual salary of $165,000. So, you know, where's the fairness here? It's just, it depends on, you know, what the commissioner of Dewar says. And I just don't think that's right. And I think there's a good chance we're going to lose our county administrator because of this. So, anyway, I think, you know, we had Mr. Zick come up and talked about the free markets. Well, if you want a free market, here it is. Get rid of the cap.
Representative Markford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm speaking as a member of the new fiscally conservative DFL party.
Did you find the pledge?
I appreciate the debate on this, and it certainly is a tough one. And, you know, whether or not the policy as we look at this is good or bad in having the governor's salary as kind of a cap, I mean, there's been some talk about the responsibilities, for example, like one county, $1.7 billion budget, 11,000 employees. But if we go on that, remember the governor has the ultimate responsibility of a $15 billion annual budget and 30,000 employees. And granted, you can argue about what he's making as far as compensation. But two points that's been brought up. But I, you know, the February forecast came out on Monday. And in there they talk about our growth since May has been 0.21% employment growth, which is four times smaller than the national average. And it says during November and December, employment actually declined in Minnesota. So I know times change economically, but we're in a time right now of budget crunch. We're in a time really of employment decline, although that hopefully is on the upgrade. But for us to say now that we're going to offer up to a 30% salary increase simply sends the wrong message at this time. And lends itself to kind of the credibility gap that we suffer at times. And if we are going to do our job as a legislature, especially during these tough budget times, I think our credibility and confidence with the people around the state depends on some of the signals we send. Finally, I don't know if we have enough information, to be quite honest. We've heard a lot of anecdotal evidence on the competitive and the market rates and the problems. But, you know, for example, we have the ICMA here, and that gives some national reports. And it'd even be better if we had some regional reports as to what the average city manager gets and so forth. But, you know, and maybe the LMC and the Association of Minnesota Counties have done some of this, but I haven't seen it. So, I mean, do we know, in fact, other than for some select positions, is it really creating a competitive disadvantage here? I don't know if we have that information to change the state law. And so I guess with the signal we're sending and the fact that, you know, I don't know if, in fact, raising it to 100 and past 114 is going to make a difference or not. I guess I'm not willing to change what the current policy is based on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's the whole point we're making here. You don't have to worry about it. Let the locals worry about it. That's the whole point of the exercise. Then, if they don't like what's being done at the local level, they'll root out the local officials that are making those decisions. You don't have to worry about it. Another thing that the state legislature doesn't have to worry about.
Representative Posh.
A couple comments. First, the whole argument of local control. I'm a local guy. I support local control. But we have inherent disparities among our cities and our counties throughout the state. And some cities can pay, and other cities 3 miles away can't. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about that we took 4 years to try to find a finance director because 4 miles away, cities were paying over $30,000 more for a finance director. Inherent disparities. Those are the concerns of mine. I don't like that we tie our salaries to the governor's salary, which is tied to whatever the political wind is. I don't think that's right. But I also think that this is going to have an effect on many cities, in particular smaller cities, that I'm concerned with. And with that, since we're dealing with this bill first, and I had an amendment drafted for the landing bill, but I was wondering if I can offer an oral amendment in the same spirit as the amendment that I have here, Chair. If nobody would
propose. So Representative Hosh, before members would say they'll accept that, why don't you tell us what it is?
Okay. On the Earhart bill, I would like to, on line 21, after subdivision, just add serving a population equal to or larger than 100,000 people. And by looking at the, I think this is a good amendment and a good compromise when looking at requests for waivers. Of the 54 waivers since 1997, I believe this amendment would have dealt with 40 of them already. So there would have only been then 14 waivers in a matter of 7 years. So I think this is a good amendment and that it's a good compromise and we can see what the effects are.
Representative Hosh, could you please, if I could have it quiet too, Representative Hosh, could you please restate your amendment with the page and line number?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My amendment would be on page 1, line 21. And after subdivision, I propose to insert serving a population equal to or larger than 100,000 people. So this would deal with your Minneapolis and St. Paul's and Duluth and Ramsey counties and Hennepin counties and Dakota counties, St. Louis, Anoka, Stearns.
Does everybody have that amendment? Are there any objections to that amendment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Representative Sharon.
I would not be in favor of this amendment. We need to allow our cities and towns to have all the tools. This bill does not mean that we will necessarily be giving raises to everybody in every city and town, but we give them the tool to do it and be able to compete in an open market. I would speak against this amendment. I know that Woodbury, where I am from, I was on the city council. We had a very difficult time getting enough qualified candidates to apply for our city manager's position because of the salary cap, and our city is less than 50,000. I'm sorry.
And members, thank you, Representative Sharon, and members, more specifically to the issue of the 24-hour rule, which I stated in the beginning, it's a difficult rule, but given that a lot of members didn't know we were actually going to vote on this bill today, I'm inclined to accept this amendment as far as him being able to present it, and I will do that unless someone makes a motion to actually not accept it. Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair, I have just been informed that my amendment would not fit into this legislation since it is repealing the law. So that I can add an amendment in, but if the amendment passes, I would assume that this entire piece of legislation would fail then. So it's
thank you, Representative Hosh.
She's in my
Representative Hosh withdraws his amendment. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask for a roll call on this bill.
Roll call being requested on the bill. There'll be a roll call vote. Representative Sharon. To the bill.
Yes. Well, I wanted to speak to Representative Marquardt's comments. I want to congratulate you and be able to mine for a nugget of gold of bad news out of that report. Congratulations on that. You must have worked really hard to find it. And then going on a full 2 days of testimony, I think I have more than enough information to act on this bill today, and I'd like to get us to vote very soon.
Thank you, Representative Sharon. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when I first found out about this bill, I guess I was inclined to not support it. I was just thinking that someone who makes $115,000 would have the opportunity to make $140,000. I guess the thing that probably upset me most about it is I wasn't that person making $140,000. But, you know, Mr. Chairman, as I sat down and I thought about this a little more and gave it proper deliberations, and I kind of thought about what if the roles were turned here? What if the federal government came down and told the state of Minnesota, you know, Minnesota, we're only going to let you pay the governor this amount of money. Or we're only going to let you pay your state legislators this amount of money. And they came down here and they told that to me. I guess what I would say is I'd say go fly a kite. You know, how do you know what's going on in Minnesota? Minnesota's very different than New York or California or Arkansas. And I can see the local areas of government in our state making that same argument, saying Dakota County is vastly different than Goodhue County. Dakota County or Minneapolis is different than St. James. So I would urge my colleagues to support the Earhart bill, and certainly it's important enough of an issue that it should not die here and should be referred to another committee to consider the deliberations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. For the record, however, if I may say, the federal government has the 10th Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, and the state legislature created all local units of government. So we still have the point of whether or not this is the time and place under the sun for local control or not local control. But good comments and a good analogy, despite that fact.
Thanks.
Further discussion. Representative Sharon.
Well, 49 other states do think it's the time.
Good comment. Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Peterson renews his motion that House Law 995 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Government Operations Committee. All those in favor of that motion?
Roll call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I forgot already. Sorry. Roll call being requested. There will be a roll call vote. Thank you.
Anderson. Sharon.
Aye.
Sharon votes aye. Cornish.
No.
Cornish votes nay. Garofalo.
Yes.
Garofalo votes aye. Hillstrom.
Aye.
Hillstrom votes aye. Hobart.
No.
Hobart votes no. Hornstein.
Yes.
Hornstein votes aye. Hosh.
No.
Hosh votes no. Lincheski.
No.
Lincheski votes no. Marquardt.
No.
Marquardt votes no. Paymar.
Aye.
Paymar votes aye. Peterson.
Aye.
Peterson votes aye. Poppy.
No.
Poppy votes no. Samuelson.
Aye.
Samuelson votes aye. Scalzi.
No.
Scalzi votes no. Tao.
Yes.
Tao votes aye. Wardlow.
Yes.
Wardlow votes aye. Lanning.
Yes.
Lanning votes aye. Olson.
Olson?
No.
Did you not want to vote today?
Are you hearing Olson? Mm-hmm. There being 10 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill passes and will be sent to government operations. And all of this, after all this, we may never know if that happened because of all the amendments that represent Lanning's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that we're done and I may adjourn. I may leave.
You may go, Representative Earhart.
Thank you.
Watch your bill go with you. Thank you, Representative Earhart, and all of you who testified, and members for your patience as we went over the time allotted. Who said time for the minutes before we come to the next bill, which is House Ball 1084?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Hillstrom.
I will move the minutes.
Moves adoption of the minutes from February 28th. Discussion? All those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Oh, we still want to do...
Well, Mr. Chairman...
Representative Lanning.
Yes, just wanted to say that, as I said at the outset when I gave testimony on Monday, that I'm a co-author of Representative Earhart's bill, but I offered...
excuse me, Representative Lanning. Excuse me, as you're leaving the room, could you please keep your conversation down or save it for out in the hall so that members can hear members discuss the bills? Thank you. Representative Lanning.
What I was going to say is that, not knowing how the Earhart bill might fare, I felt that a more modest approach should be offered, and that's what I did. And I guess my question to the committee and everyone would be that I would hate to see my alternative die if Representative Earhart's bill doesn't move forward. And so my question is, how can I be assured that this bill will remain an option should his bill meet its demise?
Representative Lanning, seeing no hands go up, one way is for you to follow that bill very closely and make sure you're ready with an amendment to change that bill if it's going to die at the next spot.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if it were to not pass government ops, the fact that it still is on the table here, would I be able to bring the bill back for consideration here in this committee?
Representative Lanning, as far as I'm concerned, yes, but it's entirely up to the committee. And that would have to meet deadline. But beyond that, you can amend Representative Earhart's bill if it runs into problems to basically do what your bill did, take a more modest approach. And if members of this committee object that there be such a substantive change to that bill, and that would mean that bill would still have to come back to this committee to finish the hearing, members can make that plea, and we'll decide that as a committee. Any other discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'd like to put the committee on notice that should the Earhart bill not move through government ops, that I would ask for this committee to come back, since my bill is on the table, to give further consideration to it.
Representative Lanning, that's perfectly in order.
Mr.
And I thank
Chair,
you for bringing that up. Representative Holberg.
I hope we don't have to hear the bill again, though.
Representative Holberg, I think we've had enough testimony. I would trust that we could just make the decision.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Potentially, because we have all the amendments here, I would be okay with us just voting them up or down and having the committee hold it, and if there's a need to bring the bill up or you to send it on, then you would be free to do that. You'd know the will of the committee, and that way we have the issue done and over with. We spent all this time testifying. People who are interested are here. You don't have to, you know, rehash this given 2 days of testimony.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, our committee time is very important. We've already spent a lot of time on this bill. You could make that motion, but we would be working on something that may not be necessary at all, because Representative Earhart's bill may just move right along. And we have a fair amount of time yet, a reasonable amount of time, for before committee deadline. And Representative Lanning's bill, I'm glad he brought this up, can certainly be brought up again and moved out of here well before committee deadline if Representative Earhart's bill were to fail. And having spoken to the Government Operations Committee about my bill, whether or not they could give it a hearing next week, I'm quite confident that Representative Earhart's bill could be heard next week, and we would know, in fact, whether or not it's going to make it next week and save our committee time today. Representative Hillstrom?
Mr. Chair, just one last thing is, you know, in the event the governor, as we heard the from the Legislative Commission, is opposed to this one, in the event he chose to veto Representative Earhart's bill, we would then need to revisit Representative Lanning's bill all over again. And in the sake of spending a few minutes and actually passing this bill on out of here, we may save years in time.
Excuse me, Representative Paymar.
I would urge that we just move on. We have several bills, yep, and people are here to testify on them, and the governor is opposed to both bills, so I don't think it really matters. The committee knows that we support Representative Lanning's bill or hearing it again if, in due time.
Thank you, Representative Paymar, and I'm going to ask that we move along, too. If there's objections, members can object, but I think it's more expedient for us to move along. I think we know the outcomes on the second bill for the most part, and we can find out, I believe, next week whether or not Representative Earhart's bill moves along. And for that matter, Representative Lanning and others can really check with committee members and find out whether or not we really should look at another option. So with that, House File 1084. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. I'd like to know if you have as many people to testify on your bill as we had on the last one.
No, I only have one person to testify.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, your bill needs to go to General Register. Let's see. I don't have anything down here. I assume General Register?
I think the General Register.
Do you have someone to move your bill?
I do not.
Representative Hansen, I will move that House Bill 1084 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 1084 is a bill dealing with noxious weed appeals. And this is a bipartisan bill that was brought to me by the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, and it would benefit all counties of Minnesota, not just Dakota County. It allows the counties to adopt an alternative process for handling an appeals order issued by a county noxious weed inspector, but it does not require them to do so. In other words, it's a permissive bill that allows counties to use this delegation option to streamline their process. Minnesota Statute 18.83 establishes a process for the county weed inspector to secure prompt control or eradication of noxious weeds. I do have some background information on noxious weeds. If you would like to have that, if not, I'll keep going. The noxious weed inspector gives notice to the landowner with instructions as to how the noxious weeds must be controlled or eradicated. In Dakota County, the authority for the noxious weed control is delegated to the Dakota County Soil and Water Conservation District. Prior to being elected to the legislature, I served 8 years on the Soil and Water Board. Our staff administered the program, and in those 8 years that I was on the board, we never had an appeal that went to the county board. I think many counties may be in the same situation. House File 1084, the current law requires counties to appoint a committee to which the weed inspector's notice may be appealed in case of a dispute. What we're doing in this bill is looking at already existing appellate boards. The county commissioners have the authority for land use zoning by the state legislature for shoreland and floodplains within the townships in Dakota County. Law allows the county board to adopt zoning controls, and it allows that zoning board to hear appeals that come to the county board. What we're doing here in this bill is asking that the noxious weed appeals, instead of going to the county board having to have an appellate committee, having to search for an appeals committee for noxious weeds, where there hasn't been any appeals for noxious weeds in a number of years, eliminating that process and designating that zoning board to have the ability, the Board of Adjustment, to have that ability to hear those appeals. So again, in summary, it's a streamlining bill. It's permissive. It allows counties to do this if they choose. And I do have the chair of the Dakota County Board of Commissioners here to provide testimony.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Joe Harris. I'm chair of the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, and I'm here to support this bill for passage. It basically will allow us to streamline county government, not only in Dakota County, but quite possibly across the state. My district includes all of the townships and most of the agricultural land in Dakota County, where the noxious weed law is most often applied in Dakota County. I have represented essentially the same part of Dakota County for the last 24 years, and in my memory, in Dakota County, there has never been a noxious weed appeal to come before the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. If the duties of the Appeals Committee could be delegated to the Board of Adjustments, the county no longer would be required to recruit appointees to this particular committee. Last year in 2004, we undertook a study studying all of our committee processes throughout Dakota County. Several committees were decided to be dropped in order to streamline our for a more efficient process. We combined various committees, and we just felt that in order to save taxpayers' money, we had to look at that. And this is through the process, this was determined by the board that we tried to get this legislation passed that would help streamline the appeals process for the noxious weed law that has been in place for many years but has never been used in Dakota County. The Board of Adjustments, as Representative Hansen pointed out, is already in place, is already dealing with citizens' appeals process on the floodplain and shoreland zoning issues, and they certainly could deal with this particular issue also. So I would ask you for your support and passage of this bill today out of your committee.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. Representative Hansen, is this your first bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grapple, actually it is not. I had my first bill yesterday, and I did bring cupcakes into the committee yesterday. Representative,
I have no further questions, Mr. Chair.
Hey, wait a minute.
Let's see, I don't think there's an exception in the rules anywhere for...
first bill before the committee.
yes. any further? Representative Wardlaw.
No. I just want to point out, when I was a freshman, every bill, my first committee, I had to bring trees to every committee.
Yes, I
just thought that was the rule.
It appears to me that this year's freshman class has been getting by more easily.
Because we're so talented.
Mr. Chair, seeing that I have transgressed, I would ask for mercy from the committee. don't hold it against our bill. So. Thank you.
Any questions for Representative Hansen or Commissioner Harris? If not, see, who had the motion to begin with here?
I don't.
The chair, okay. The chair renews his motion that this bill be approved and recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. You won in spite of failing to bring goodies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you.
Next, House Bill 1093, Representative Hausman. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymar.
I'd like to move House File 1093.
Representative Paymar, I understand this needs to go to civil law, is that right?
Civil law.
Does it?
Okay. Representative Paymar moves House File 1093 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. The bill is before us. Representative Hausman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm joined today by Chuck Payton, Chair of the St. Paul Convention and Visitors Bureau, and by Joe Reed, who's acting Chair of the St. Paul River Center Board. This bill allows those two organizations, the St. Paul River Center, the convention venue, and the St. Paul Convention and Visitors Bureau, to merge. It's an administrative merger. We now have two boards of directors would merge into one, two administrations would merge into one. Obviously, there are efficiencies and streamlining to be accomplished and eliminating duplication of effort and saving some money along the way. The reason we have to come to you to ask you whether we can do this merger is that the legislation, the River Center was created in statute, and so we have to come back to you. We had this bill before you last year. We went to all the committees, and unfortunately the bill was on consent calendar at the end of the session, so we're starting over this year. I understand it also has to go to taxes. There was one amendment that Representative Abrams requested last year. We've incorporated that into the bill, so the change made last year is now part of the bill. And again, we have both of these gentlemen here for either testimony or questions. Do you have more to say?
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Joe Reed. I'm a resident of St. Paul and treasurer and acting chair of the River Center Authority. Just have a couple of quick comments. First, the summary of the bill indicates that two city council members would be appointed to this board, and the bill itself does say three, and that is the intent of the mayor and city council, that there would be three members appointed. Both the River Center and the Convention and Visitors Bureau agree that the structure proposed by this bill achieves our goal of having a single voice in the city of St. Paul to speak on behalf of the convention, or speak to the convention and tourism audience on behalf of the citizens of St. Paul and the private hospitality industry, and to maximize the city's publicly owned convention and convention center and arena complex. I just want to briefly explain the change that Representative Hausman mentioned. It deals with the sale of tickets. During the review of the bill last year, language was added to recognize that any sale of tickets or admissions to events in the River Center are taxable. Which is trying to make it clear, since this new entity is a tax-exempt organization, that these tickets would still be taxable. We're not going to seek provision for them to be exempt from taxes. Finally, I just want the committee to know that by resolution, Mayor Kelly and the City Council support this legislation.
Thank you. Mr. Patton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Chuck Payton. I'm resident of St. Paul and chair of the St. Paul CDB. I would only add to Mr. Reed's comments the direct benefits to the city that include additional tax revenue generated by increased tourism activity, more vitality from additional visitors to the city, which in turn will help our businesses, private businesses, and a consistent marketing message from St. Paul to all its target markets to maximize the impact of those messages. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
So, Mr. Chair, the liability portion will be scrutinized by the Civil Law Committee, and then Representative Krinke wants to see the bill before it goes to the floor.
Questions? Seeing none, thorough presentation. Representative Paymar renews his motion that House File 1093 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. All those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed to be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Hausman and all of you who testified. Members, so that I don't forget an announcement, our agenda is starting to fill up, and we've been keeping this room available for on Monday's following session. And I need to announce that we'll have to plan on meeting Monday after session. Just to forewarn you of that. My bill is up next, and we have 10 minutes, and so that we don't get any broken testimony of for and against, like we did on the last bill, because I feel that it's difficult to be fair to both sides when that occurs, I'm going to ask that we not take any testimony on my bills. If members would like, we could leave now and make up for the Monday meeting, or I could just present the bill now, but I think it might be best just to present the bill next time and take testimony next time, because we absolutely don't have time for testimony on my bill today. Any preferences?
Let's do that.
Let's do that. Okay, we'll just move everything to Monday. Okay? So we'll be back on the prioritization process, because our agenda is getting quite full again. So far, this week, we were pretty much able to do it because we were able to schedule everything without that prioritization process, but that will be going around again next week. The week after. For the week after. So, any questions? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, will that prioritization come out on this Friday or Monday for the following week?
Comes out Monday.
Monday for the following week.
And then it's supposed to be back on Tuesday. And we announce the agenda on Tuesday, right? Yeah. Comes out on Monday, you return it to Mary, and the gets announced on Tuesday for the following week.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think we have 8 bills next week, and 12 bills the following week. So, with that, no objections, meeting adjourned.